Today is Thursday, October 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump continued criticizing the allegations that he misused power of his office as the first impeachment inquiry witness testifies.
Well, if you look at the whistleblower's complaint, it's totally inaccurate because the conversation that I had was absolutely perfect.
Also ahead, protests in Iraq claim at least five lives and injure over 100, and clashes and protests continue in Hong Kong. Those stories and more are all coming up next. U.S. President Donald Trump spoke to reporters today prior to his departure for Florida. The president once more took issue with the whistleblower complaint that has launched an impeachment inquiry by the House of Representatives Democrats.
Well, if you look at the whistleblower's complaint, it's totally inaccurate because the conversation that I had was absolutely perfect. And most people that have read it say the same thing. The whistleblower never saw the conversation. He got his information, I guess, second or third hand. He wrote something that was total fiction. And now when people see that, they're not happy.
The whistleblower complaint says several people with firsthand knowledge came to him or her, and those allegations were found to be credible and of urgent concern by the intelligence community's independent inspector general. The White House released a document giving details of the president's call to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, but is not a verbatim transcript of that call. Instead, it is a memo and a summary of the call written and produced by White House staff. You can also read that memo and the inspector general's letter at voanews.com. President Trump also was asked what he hoped President Zelensky would do for him.
Well, I would think that if they were honest about it, they'd start a major investigation into the Bidens. It's a very simple answer. They should investigate the Bidens, because how does a company that's newly formed and all these companies, if you look at, and by the way, likewise, China should start an investigation into the Bidens, because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine. So I would say that President Zelensky, if it were me, I would recommend that they start an investigation into the Bidens.
The president gave no evidence to support his allegations that the Bidens acted improperly. Today, the former special envoy to Ukraine, who resigned last week after the release of the whistleblower complaint, is appearing behind closed doors with the House of Representatives investigators. The AP's Jackie Quinn has that part of the story.
Congressional investigators want to ask former envoy Kurt Volker about the role he played in President Trump's efforts to press Ukrainian leaders for damaging information about the son of former Vice President Joe Biden. Volker's name appears in the whistleblower complaint about a meeting that he had with Ukraine's president and other officials the day after that July 25th phone call to provide advice about how to navigate Trump's demands. Volker, a career Foreign Service officer, is said to be eager to tell lawmakers his side of the story. The State Department says Volker confirmed he had connected a presidential advisor in Ukraine with Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
And now to unpack everything and to provide a little insight is David M. Barrett, professor in the Political Science Department at Villanova University. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
So there is a lot to unpack today, and I want to get your reaction and, you know, what you make out of the comments that President Trump made on the South Lawn as he was headed to Florida.
Well, it occurred to me today that the president is trying to establish a sort of new norm, which is that it's okay for presidents to call on foreign governments to look into the activities of his political rivals. We think back to 2016, where he said this to Russia, "Hey, Russia, you know, see what you can find with Hillary Clinton lost emails," and then, of course, this whole big Ukraine thing, and then today, very remarkably, saying, "Well, China, you should look into the Bidens." It's just, I mean, I'm a scholar of the presidency, and I just cannot think of a parallel in U.S. history of a president trying so hard to get foreign governments to look into the president's political rivals. So I know we've said this before, but it's extraordinary.
Now, if we take a look at the president's comments and the allegations moving before him, it's come out that the whistleblower went to the chair, Adam Schiff, before going to the inspector general. So Schiff knew about the complaint about a month ahead of time. Does that complicate things for the Democrats?
I think politically it could, simply because the president and his supporters will say this is grossly improper or something like that. I'm not sure how it is. I mean, what I'm hearing and reading from Congressman Schiff is that he did not have a personal meeting with him. I think people who become whistleblowers, my reading of history of other whistleblowers is they go through a process of reaching out in Washington, and then so, you know, to people or institutions, committees, whatever, that might be interested. So I don't see that there's any sort of legal problem, certainly, but that doesn't mean that the president and his supporters could not turn it into at least a small to medium-sized political problem for the Democrats.
We're talking today as the former envoy to Ukraine is testifying behind closed doors with Republican and Democratic staff in the House of Representatives. You know, those hearings are closed to the public, but, you know, in the days to come, we may learn a little bit about what is going to come out of that. What do you think is the key to look out for?
Well, what I'm going to want to know is, are there details that are new? Do we learn something? Now, of course, as you say, it's a closed hearing. You and I are alert to hearing any hint. So your news report mentioned, well, you know, it is said that, you know, he's got something really interesting to say that's revealing. But a short while ago, a Republican member of Congress who was in the hearing basically said, you know, the former special envoy has really nothing new to say, nothing that fits with the Democrats' narrative. So you and I and the public are for now left on the sidelines. I mean, what I want to know is, what is his account? Is it in some way damaging to the president? Or maybe not. But, of course, we would like to know.
This is also coming a day after the State Department Inspector General went to the House with some documents that reportedly had White House letterhead on it, letterhead from the Trump hotels, that the Democrats really, you know, cast as more of a conspiracy theory type thing. What do you read into the IG coming forward with what he said was an urgent matter?
Well, it's impossible to know for sure, but it certainly sounds like an example of how the executive branch bureaucracies have become more politicized to do the president's political bidding. I mean, this is really a kind of a sad but funny comedy of errors yesterday, where there's this thinking that, oh, this is something really big, and it wasn't. There was nothing that was there that will turn out to have any use at all, as far as I can tell from what I've read about it. So it's a sort of a bizarre little political comedy. But again, the State Department doing this, and it seems to me it's sort of a political thing that they did. The executive branch bureaucracies are becoming, they are being responsive to the president's political agenda, is what it sounds like to me.
David M. Barrett is a professor in the political science department at Villanova University. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
At least 5 people were killed and another 132 wounded on Wednesday in renewed nationwide clashes between demonstrators and Iraqi security forces, the largest display of public anger against Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi's year-old government. Protests, which started on Tuesday over unemployment, corruption, and poor public services, have escalated, with many chanting for the fall of the regime, a slogan first popularized during the 2011 Arab Spring uprisings. Police and the army opened fire and launched tear gas canisters to disperse hundreds of protesters all over Baghdad. The protesters blocked the main highway connecting the capital to Iraq's northern provinces. This unidentified protester called it a people's protest and that people were revolting and wouldn't stop until the government changes. He felt protesters had given the government long enough to change. In the southern city of Nasiriyah, gunfights between protesters and security forces broke out, with elite counterterrorism troops deploying after police lost control of the situation, according to police sources speaking to Reuters news agency. Thousands gathered in the oil-rich city of Basra, but the protests were peaceful. There were also peaceful protests in Samwara. An Interior Ministry spokesman said one child was killed on Wednesday when a protester threw a bottle filled with gasoline at a vehicle carrying civilian passengers in Baghdad, and another was killed in the southern city of Amara, and one protester died of wounds sustained on Tuesday. You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
For years, study after study provided evidence that eating a diet that includes red meat would put us at greater risk for ailments such as heart disease or cancer. A new international study led by researchers at two Canadian universities now suggests that most adults can continue to consume the same amount of red and processed meats they have been eating all along. The researchers conducted four extensive reviews of numerous trials and studies that gauged the increased risks of cardiovascular disease and cancer from consuming red and processed meats. In a text response to VOA, the American Heart Association says they continue to recommend that adults eat an overall healthy eating pattern with foods like vegetables, fruits, nuts, lean protein, and fish, and to avoid those with trans fats, sodium, and refined carbohydrates. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Hong Kong anti-government demonstrators clashed with police into the early hours Thursday, venting anger over a policeman's shooting and wounding of a teenager earlier in the week, as months of protests show no signs of letting up. Reuters' Joel Flynn reports.
Violence continued to spiral in the early hours of Thursday in Hong Kong as protesters went on a rampage, angry at the shooting of a teenager by police. Demonstrators hurled Molotov cocktails at this police station, where fire was quickly met with tear gas. Fury found its way into metro stations too, where turnstiles and cameras were vandalized, while in the streets, roads were blocked. Earlier, hundreds had rallied across the city to protest the shooting. Some held signs saying, "Don't shoot our kids," while others folded origami cranes, symbolizing peace and freedom.
I think every Hong Kong people will not afraid of this brutality of the Hong Kong police. We will keep standing out and keep telling the government what is our five demands and keep protesting until the real democracy and we have the real freedom in Hong Kong.
The wounded protester has been named as 18-year-old student Tony Zhang. He was shot in the chest point blank on Tuesday as he fought a police officer with a metal pipe, but is now stable in hospital and under arrest. On Thursday, he was charged with rioting and assaulting a police officer. The rioting charges alone mean Zhang could face up to 10 years in jail. It was the first time a demonstrator was shot with a live round in the almost 17 weeks since unrest erupted in the city. Police said it was self-defense, with officers worried about their lives and acting according to official guidelines. They're now urging the government to impose curfews to help curb the escalating violence.
And that was Reuters reporter Joel Flynn. The European Union will retaliate against the United States' decision to slap tariffs on a range of the bloc's exports. Products include olives, whiskey, wine, cheese, yogurt, and more, and are expected to cause job losses. The threat responds to the Trump administration's decision to put new import taxes on EU imports worth $7.5 billion, opening a new chapter in the global trade wars that are heightening fears of a global recession. British opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn says no Labour Party legislator can back the new Brexit proposal submitted by Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Corbyn said in Parliament that the new plan is just a rehashed version of previously rejected ones. The plan has received a mixed response from European leaders and seems to fall short of meeting their requirements for keeping an open Irish border or provide Ireland sufficient guarantees. A Cambodian judge ordered a new investigation of two former Radio Free Asia journalists accused of espionage. A court decision on the case was expected Thursday, but the judge said that there was insufficient evidence from the electronic equipment seized from the pair for him to render a verdict. Radio Free Asia, whose parent organization is the U.S. Agency for Global Media, also oversees VOA. RFA shut down its Phnom Penh bureau in 2017 amid a massive government crackdown on independent media. Pakistan says that visiting U.S. and Taliban delegates will hold a direct bilateral meeting to discuss resumption of peace talks aimed at ending the nearly two decades of conflict in neighboring Afghanistan. U.S. President Donald Trump abruptly canceled the Afghan peace process on September 7th, citing continued Taliban attacks on civilian and American troops in Afghanistan. An employee armed with a knife attacked officers inside Paris police headquarters Thursday, killing at least four people before he was fatally shot. An official told reporters the attack appears to have begun in an office and continued elsewhere in the large police compound across the street from Notre Dame Cathedral. The number of people injured was not immediately released. The police authority said that the motive is unknown, but the 20-year-old police employee allegedly responsible for the attack worked as an administrator in the intelligence unit and had not previously shown any problems. North Korea said on Thursday that it had successfully test-fired a new submarine-launched ballistic missile from the sea ahead of fresh nuclear talks with the United States. Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks has those details.
North Korea said Thursday a projectile it fired this week was a ballistic missile launched from a submarine. Analysts told Reuters this makes the test fire the most provocative since the U.S. began talking with North Korea again in 2018. Photos in state media showed the missile emerging from water before a rocket booster sent it skyward. A submarine launch would match what the South Korean military suspected the day before.
The missile seemed to fly 565 miles high and 280 miles in distance. We're analyzing details because we believe that it was fired from sea and it is likely to be a Pukguksong class weapon.
Pukguksong, or Polestar, are what the North's earlier submarine weapons were called. On Thursday, state media called the new missiles Pukguksong 3, and analysts say they may be a modified version of the old projectiles. Wednesday marked the ninth launch since Kim Jong-un met U.S. President Donald Trump in June. The latest test may be a reminder of the North's capabilities just days before nuclear talks with the U.S. restart. The UN Security Council has passed resolutions that ban the North from using ballistic missile technology. Pyongyang rejects that, saying the sanctions are an infringement on its right to self-defense.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. The United Nations Security Council may meet on Friday behind closed doors to discuss the launch. UN Special Envoy for Syria, Geir Pedersen, says Syria's Constitutional Committee will meet October 30th to begin the process of rewriting or drafting a new constitution for the war-torn country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from where the talks will take place.
It took nearly 2 years of negotiations to finalize the composition of the Constitutional Committee. Special Envoy for Syria, Geir Pedersen, says this is the first agreement of its kind after more than 8 years of conflict. He says the committee will not solve the crisis in Syria, but it could help bridge differences in Syrian society and build trust. He says it could be a door opener to the broader political process. He adds achieving a nationwide ceasefire would move the procedure forward and might help stabilize the situation in Idlib and in the northeast. Syria and its Russian ally are engaged in a military offensive to retake the region from the al-Qaeda linked militant group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham.
The situation in the northeast is one of many challenges that we do have. What we have made sure is that the committee has a broad representation from all segments of the Syrian society, you know, different ethnic, different religious communities, and of course, different political affiliations.
The 150-member committee is divided into three groups of 50 government, 50 opposition, and 50 civil society members, 30% of whom are women. The entire group will gather in the same room at the start of the meeting and then break up into small sessions to discuss various aspects of the proposed constitution. The gathering is seen as an important first step in ending Syria's long-fought civil war, a conflict that has killed more than 400,000 people and displaced more than 12 million, both internally and as refugees. Pedersen says releasing detainees and providing information on missing persons could help build confidence and trust among the warring parties. He says that could help the Constitutional Committee negotiate an agreement that reflects the needs of society as a whole. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Hawaii's vibrant reefs are home to amazing populations of corals and fish, which are under growing stress and danger from a spike in nearby ocean temperatures. A similar underwater heat wave damaged the reef 4 years ago. Now, researcher Greg Asner and others are using divers and satellites to study these corals and find ways to protect them. VOA's Jim Randall has our story.
Bright-colored data show Hawaii's reefs in trouble. Brighter colors mean hotter water more likely to damage coral by bleaching. Some signs of bleaching corals greet divers in Hawaiian waters. The reefs are still recovering from an ocean heat wave 4 years ago. Scientists are studying the ecosystem as they seek ways to preserve it for future generations. Linking underwater observations with satellite data could help.
Every dive is just a small little taste of what's going on. So what's really important here is that we're taking these measurements, connecting them to our aircraft data, and then connecting them again to the satellite data. And that lets us scale up to see the big picture to get the truth about what's going on here.
Hawaii's coral reefs are critical, say experts. Not only do they attract tourists who boost the economy, the reefs help protect Hawaii's beaches and facilities from storm waves and floods. They also account for a quarter of sea species, even though they're just a small slice of the ocean. Reefs are the most diverse marine ecosystems on Earth, says oceanographer Jameson Gove.
Corals provide habitat for fish, and these are fish that are important for ecosystem functions. These are fish that are sustenance for local people, and of course our economy, whether it's through tourism or, say, commercial fisheries.
This is what healthy reefs around the world should look like. Scientists worry that warming waters will cause Hawaii to lose this splendor and jeopardize many important fish species. Researchers and divers are seeing signs of reef bleaching many places. They're urging visitors to Hawaii to avoid further stressing the reefs by touching them, by using certain types of damaging sunscreens, and by not catching certain types of fish that help the reef.
While this news is depressing, I think that there is still reason for hope. You know, there were corals in Hawaii and around the world that survived previous bleaching events, and there are corals that will survive this bleaching event. And so the more that we can do to mitigate our impact, either locally and or globally, will really provide an opportunity for these corals to persist in the future.
Experts say protecting the reefs will continue to be a major challenge because of climate change and warming seas. Scientists say without action to reduce greenhouse gases, bleaching could become an annual event by the end of the century. Jim Randall, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, engineer Sidrak Franklin, and managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, thank you so much for listening. You'll be able to find in-depth coverage of world events and news on our website. And don't forget, with our mobile application, you can download our stories and take them with you anytime, day or night. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.